Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Wednesday, September 16th, 2015, episode 11.08, the Week 2 Preview Show. Oh, people, what a week one. What a wild week. That's the way how you start the NFL season with a bang, people. It was a great week one. And all I have to say to you, though, right now is it's only 1 week. Please don't overreact. I've been listening to the pundits all over the place, and they're overreacting. Oh, my God. If your team lost, the sky is falling. If your team won, we're going to the Super Bowl. Woohoo! Calm down. It was only 1 week. I'm talking to you, Carolina Panthers fans. You beat the Jacksonville Jaguars. Calm down. I'm talking to you, Seattle Seahawks fans. You lost the game in overtime. Calm down. No need to overreact and overreach. No need to panic. Lots of football still to be played. Come on, man. It's just 1 week. I'll briefly talk to you in this episode about my weekend in Dallas and the week one game between the Cowboys and the Giants and some interesting New York Giants fans there. The injury bug once again rears its ugly head in week one, and Greg the Bills fan gives fans an early 1-0 lead over yours truly. This week, I'm making my week two picks versus Mick Collington. I sent Mick an email, but sadly, he did not reply with his comments, so I'll just have to make stuff up for him as to why he took the teams he took. We differ on about 5 or 6 games. We'll see once we get to them. But right now, let's chomp it in.
Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves.
All right, people, if you want to put your picks up against mine, just go out to nflrnr.com/pick'em and make your picks online. I randomly select someone every week to go up against my picks. As I said, this week's name that was picked was Niedermeyer, the gentleman behind that. Username is Mick Collington, and he will go up against me a little bit later on in the show. Also later on the show, I'll do, once again, the spin the wheel, the show donor random wheel of fun. This week's prize is a mini fathead tradable of Washington Redskins wide receiver Pierre Garçon. So that will go out in the mail. A couple of other other winners that have won recently over the last couple weeks. We don't have an address to send to you, so send. If you've won a prize and have not received it in the mail, please send me an email, steven@rrn.net, with an address so I can get that prize out to you. All right, let's get it started, and let's just quickly recap week one. Now, generally, there will be a weekly recap show. But since week one, I was out of town. I was in Dallas, getting back late on Monday, having 2 Monday night football games. Very difficult for me to get a show up Monday night with the recap. So I'm just going to quickly talk about week one here. Then I'll get my week two predictions for you. We'll talk about week two. And then next week, hopefully on Monday after Monday Night Football, we'll have the recap show up and ready for you by Tuesday morning. That's the way hopefully it will work out. But as I said, things just come up. Sometimes life gets a little crazy. But let's start out with the trip to Dallas. It was incredible. First of all, I took my nephew Jordan. You all probably know Jordan as Jeff's son, his oldest son, turned 21. And I took him to the Cowboy game as his birthday present. My Trisha and I bought him the ticket to the game, and we asked his mom and dad, Jeff and Dee Dee, to purchase his flight, and they gave him a flight for his present, and he got to enjoy a very, very nice weekend in Dallas. We got to see some things. And obviously the game was fantastic. Cowboys gave him a great present with an incredible comeback win, 27-26 over the Giants. He was just flying on air. It was fantastic. That stadium just does not cease to amaze me. It is just beautiful. Doesn't matter where you look at it, what angle you look at it from, it is just an amazing stadium. If you're not following me on Periscope, follow NFL R&R. I shared some videos, spots as we walked up to the stadium, kind of around outside the stadium, showed some of the pregame atmosphere and how people kind of, there's these kind of like areas and lounges where people can hang out and drink and party and get ready for the game and have a good time. And then some of the post-game craziness, you know, that followed the game, the comeback, and people were just kind of going crazy. And some Giants fans who, you know, it's strange to me that you are the fan of the visiting team and you have to get a little unruly at the opposing team's stadium. Look, if you're a fan of a team, especially the away team, and you come to the home stadium of the team that you're playing, don't act like a boob, okay? Go and enjoy the game, and if your team wins, fantastic. You can cheer and, you know, be nice about it. Don't be a jerk about it, and vice versa. If your team loses, in this case, especially in the dramatic fashion that your team lost, don't be a jerk and go around and try to look to instigate for a fight. I can't tell you how many Giants fans were just itching for someone to kind of say something to them so they could instigate something. It was pretty crazy, but that game was fantastic. It'll go down as one of the best memories in my lifetime, especially being able to share it with Jordan. The other crazy thing, coming back from Dallas, we were on a plane from Dallas back to Los Angeles, and out of nowhere, a couple comes up to me and says, "You're Steven Miranda. Do you remember us?" And I kind of looked at them. They did look very familiar. And they were like, "We met you your very first trip out to London." I don't know if you guys remember that. That's 8 years ago, back when the first international series game between the Dolphins and the Giants happened. That's 8 years ago. We had a party. Jeff and I had a party. And actually, Jeff brought his family with him to London that year. His then 13-year-old son, Jordan, was there. And they said, "Yeah, we met you at the Crooked Surgeon. Remember that pub? Remember that pub, people? The Crooked Surgeon. We met you at the Crooked Surgeon. This is my wife, and she said she would become a Dallas Cowboys supporter if you would support the Tottenham Hotspurs." And I said, "Great! I have two jerseys of the Spurs." And she's like, "Well, we were at the game. Can you believe that they were actually in Dallas at the game?" Watching the Dallas Cowboys, because 8 years ago, she promised to support the Dallas Cowboys if I supported the Spurs. I'm still following the Spurs. She's still following the Cowboys. And both her and her husband, Andrew and Rachel, thank you very much, first of all, for coming up. And that's awesome that you are still supporting the Dallas Cowboys. Thank you very much for continuing to listen. That was really cool. It was awesome that you guys came and talked to me on the plane and after in L.A. when we got off. I hope you guys are having a great time in Santa Barbara and Montecito, where you guys are hanging out with family and friends. That's really cool. And I just thought that was really cool that you guys came up to me and talked to me after 8 years. I haven't seen you guys in 8 years. That was really, really cool. And just a neat experience to have someone who you talked into supporting one team in the NFL 8 years ago, and here we are. She is still supporting the Dallas Cowboys. It was pretty cool. Okay, the injury bug in the NFL just won't go away. So all I can say, I mean, there were a ton of week one injuries. I'm just going to highlight some key ones. First of all, wide receivers took the biggest hits. Dez Bryant, wide receiver for the Dallas Cowboys, out 4 to 6 weeks. Some people are saying 8 weeks. I think Roddy White of the Atlanta Falcons said today he thinks Dez Bryant is out for the year. But Dez is being optimistic. They're saying 4 to 6 weeks with a broken bone in his foot. T.Y. Hilton suffered a knee injury for the Indianapolis Colts. The x-rays were negative, but Owner Jim Irsay said that the bruise might cause Hilton to miss a few weeks. DeSean Jackson, wide receiver of the Washington Redskins, came up lame with a hamstring injury. He's going to miss some time. Demaryius Thomas injured his hand during the game against the Baltimore Ravens, but the Denver Broncos are saying that he's fortunate that he is fine and he's not going to miss any time. He was actually at practice today. Then the concussions hit. Quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, Josh McCown, suffered a concussion in the first quarter as he tried to jump headfirst into the end zone to score a touchdown. He took a shot to the head and got knocked out. Panthers linebacker Luke Kuechly and Dolphins tight end Deion Sims all left their games with concussions as well. Right now, no word on if any of those guys have passed the concussion protocol, so look for them to possibly at least miss 1 week because of the concussion. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, folks. There were a ton of other injuries. Those were just some of the big names that happened in week one. And I think teams are going to have to realize now that it is important to have depth at certain positions because that is going to be the key for them to be successful. If you don't have someone to come in and replace a Luke Kuechly or a Josh McCown or a Dez Bryant, your team is going to suffer for it. And the fact that, I mean, let's just look at the Cleveland Browns. In comes Johnny Manziel. I knew that's a big name, and everybody's excited that football Johnny comes on to the playing field. He throws a bomb for a touchdown, and, you know, it's looked like, wow, maybe he came to play. But then Johnny Manziel can kind of regress a little bit, fumbles, interceptions, turned the ball over far too much. He became turnover Johnny, and that's just not good enough. To replace, look, McCown, that first drive in the first quarter, he started that drive, I think, at the 11-yard line, marched him all the way down to just inches of scoring a touchdown. When he leapt, he was going to score a touchdown, but he took the hit and he fumbled. And of course he fumbled because he took a pretty big shot to his head. But he drove them the length of the field. The fumble that the Jets recovered was recovered in their own end zone. Drove them length of field. He was looking pretty good. He was looking like he had command of that Cleveland Brown offense. But then he takes a shot, gets a concussion, has to sit down, and in comes Johnny Manziel, and he just couldn't get it done. So let's see if Johnny can get the job done after a whole week of practice. Unfortunately for the Browns, here come the Tennessee Titans with a red-hot Marcus Mariota. In a defense that looked pretty good last week against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So not sure if they're going to be able to replace McCown that well. And that's the type of depth that I'm looking at. If you don't have a solid backup and your starter goes down, that is just not good at all. The league has fined. Oh, Adam Jones, what are you doing? $35,000. Adam Pac-Man Jones lost his temper in a game against the Oakland Raiders on Sunday. And he got on top of, if you haven't seen the play, he got on top of Amari Cooper, wouldn't let him up, was kind of shoving his head into the ground. And Jones got fined $35,000. And that's what happens when Pac-Man dies. Jones said today when they was asked about the fine, he says, "I can't promise it won't happen again. I'm an emotional player." And to Adam Jones, I will say, if it happens again, you will win Boob of the Freaking Day because you are
Boob of the Day.
If you do it again, get off the player. I don't care how emotional you are on the football field. After the play is over, you don't just straddle a guy and shove his head into the ground. That is not acceptable at any level. So, I think it was actually lucky that he didn't get kicked out of the game. I would have tossed him. He's down there on top of another player, digging his head into the ground. And I don't care how emotional you get. Your team's winning. They were killing the Raiders. You don't give them ammunition to try and come back. And that's how can you say that it might happen again because I'm an emotional player? That's just ridiculous. As a matter of fact, you do get
Boob of the day.
Just for having such an awful interview after being told that you were fined $35,000. Another very interesting thing happening. The New York Giants obviously lost to the Dallas Cowboys, and it was the fashion in which they lost. They had that game in hand. The Cowboys had no business winning that football game. And the Giants, you know, all they have to do at the end of the game there, Cowboys don't have any timeouts. It's third and goal from the one. You run it, and if you don't get it, you chew off 40 seconds off the clock. You kick a field goal, and you take a six-point lead. If you run it hard and you get it, you score a touchdown, you take a 10-point lead. And you win the game. You only leave about, you know, 30, 40 seconds and change for the Dallas Cowboys. It's just not enough time. Instead, they try to run a pass. Eli Manning throws the ball out of the back of the end zone. I don't know. He had a brain fart. Because Eli has to know, I'm running a pass play. If there's nothing there, I have to eat it. I have to go down on one knee and take a sack because we want to keep the clock running. Well, no, he just threw it out the back of the end zone. It stops the clock, giving the Cowboys a minute 37. It was, I think, a minute 40 and change, a minute 43 at that point. They have to come out. They kick the field goal. They take a six-point lead. But now there's a minute 37 on the clock. You just gave the Cowboys an extra minute. An extra minute by throwing the football out of the back of the field. So, apparently, Rashard Jennings, the running back, he came out on Monday and said, well, look, Eli told me not to score. He told me to just, you know, to just get tackled inside the on the field of play and not score a touchdown. And he kind of, everyone said, well, you know, he's throwing Eli under the bus, telling everybody, reporters, that Eli told him not to score a touchdown. Well, that kind of got blown out of proportion. Of course, people, you know, coaches from time to time tell players not to score a touchdown. It happens. I think everybody, especially in the media in New York, because the New York media can take a little story and turn it into a huge dumpster fire in a minute. So he wrote a letter, put it on the back page of one of the New York papers. I think it was the back page of the New York Post. And he said, I see now how what I said could be easily misunderstood as an expression of resentment. I make no claims to be a perfect communicator, but I also assure you that I had no ill will at all in stating what I did. Yet, I admit in retrospect that I should not have shared that information with the world. I chose to do so, and for that choice, I am truly sorry. As soon as I got word of the headlines, I called Eli, and before I can even begin to apologize, he basically expressed his understanding. Being the humble guy that he is, he just wants to put this fiasco behind us with no hard feelings so that we could focus on the Falcons. You have to take out an ad. I didn't know that this is how you apologize to people, but you take out an ad in a newspaper in New York to say your apology, even though I don't even really see an apology here other than he tried to apologize. And Eli said, you know, I understand. Don't worry about it. Let's focus on the Falcons. I guess he does say, I'm truly sorry that he chose to do so. Just be quiet, Jennings. Let the media do what it does. Be quiet. You in your locker room, talk to Eli. Say, hey, you know what? It's not really what I meant to say. Kind of got out. I shouldn't have said that. What you and I talk about in the huddle is our business, and I shouldn't have shared that with the rest of the world. That's my bad. It won't happen again. And that would have been the end of it, but you got to go and put a letter out in the newspaper? Come on, dog. Let's go. Let's go. It's like I said, it's week one. What did I say earlier in the show, people? It's just week one. You don't have to overreact. Just don't do it. I think little Jennings here got a little case of the overreaction there in week one and had to go put a sorry in the newspaper. All right, folks, just about that time to get to week two. But before we do, a quick recap of week one. Both Greg, the Bills fan, and myself finished the week at 11-5. We differed on six games, and we split those. But the good thing is, in that split was the challenge game as the Buffalo Bills rocked Indianapolis, rocked them, that's right, in their game, and gave U fans the first challenge win of the season as they took care of the Indianapolis Colts. Now, the other games that we differed on, I had the Cleveland Browns beating the Jets. That didn't happen, but once again, you know, you lose your quarterback in the first quarter, and you bring your second quarterback in, that's generally not going to be really good. He had the St. Louis Rams beating the Seattle Seahawks. I didn't see that happening. The Rams played hard football. They got it done. They tied Seattle late in the game, forced overtime, and in overtime they got a field goal. And on fourth and one, this time it was no passy-passy. It was handoff to Marshawn Lynch. But I'm sitting there watching the game before I head to the Dallas Giants game. I'm sitting there watching the game with my brother, my nephew Jordan, my wife Trisha, my brother's girlfriend Rachel, her son Ryan, and we're watching the game, and here it is. We've got the game up. It's fourth and one, and I tell everybody they're going to hand it to Marshawn because they've spent an entire offseason saying, oh, my God, from 1 yard line at the goal line, they threw the football. How could they do that? So, of course, everybody, I'm telling you, everybody in their dog, including everybody on the St. Louis side of the ball, knew they were going to turn around and hand the ball to Marshawn Lynch. And then your offensive line gets blown up, and they basically hit Lynch 2 yards in the backfield. Play never had a chance. It never had a chance because the situation was fourth and one, and everybody knew they were going to try to make amends for their mistake in the Super Bowl, and boom, they got stuff. Now, I'm no super genius, all right? But I think in that situation, rolling, you know, a fake handoff to Marshawn Lynch and rolling out on a naked bootleg of Russell Wilson would have been appropriate. Heck, a naked bootleg and then have him toss it to the tight end, who is, by the way, Jimmy Graham, is pretty good, would have been appropriate. You don't, they talk themselves into running that football way before that situation ever came up. And I think everybody knew it. Bad mistake. And so Seattle lost, St. Louis won, and Greg got that game as well. Now, on to the games that we differed on that I won. He took Oakland. I took Bengals, blah, 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 the Cincinnati Bengals, and the Bengals just took it to Oakland. I had Tennessee. I said the Marcus Mariota would do a lot better than Jameis Winston in their first game against each other. And sure enough, Mariota throws four TDs. Jameis Winston's all over the field. Threw a pick six, I think, in the first 2 minutes of the game. It was really bad for him. And Tennessee dismantled the Buccaneers. And then, obviously, the final game, Sunday Night Football, I had the Dallas Cowboys. He had the New York Giants. And, of course, I needed a late comeback drive by Tony Romo that was incredible for the win. Other games that we lost, we both had the Houston Texans. Didn't see Kansas City going into Houston and putting up the points that they did. That was pretty impressive. And we both had Minnesota. And what were we thinking? The final Monday Night Football game of the night, San Francisco took care of business. And Teddy Bridgewater, as much as I talked him up on this show, in that preview show, he looked awful. They looked really, really bad. San Francisco took it to Minnesota. So those were our five losses. All the other games, we took New England to start the season. They took care of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Green Bay knocked off Chicago. We got that one. We got Carolina beating the hapless Jacksonville Jaguars. Miami to take Washington. Arizona to beat New Orleans at home. San Diego to beat Detroit at home. And Denver to beat Baltimore at home. We got all those. And the final Monday night football game, we both took Atlanta over Philly. And Philadelphia just did not look good to start. They made a nice little comeback there at the end. But they still have, obviously, some work to do, especially in that secondary, because Julio Jones ate them up. He literally ate their lunch. It was very impressive what Matt Ryan and Julio Jones were able to do to that Philadelphia Eagles secondary. And anybody who plays that team from here on out should watch out, because it's going to be no joke when Atlanta comes to town to play. So that's week one. We both are 11-5. That's 69% correct, by the way. So it's a pretty good start. I had a much better start against the spread. I made five bets this weekend against the spread, and I was a perfect 5-0. Those bets were I took the under in the Steelers-Patriots game. I took Arizona to cover the 3 points against New Orleans. I took Miami to cover the 3.5 points against Washington. I took Cincinnati to cover the 3 points against Oakland. And I took the Carolina Panthers to cover the 2.5 points over Jacksonville. And all of those hit, making me 5-0 for the weekend. It was a very, very nice weekend for me indeed as far as betting. And only legal betting. Remember, only if you're in Las Vegas or in or my friends overseas who can just, you know, walk into any corner store and place a bet there in London. So good stuff there for week one. It's time to move on to the picks in week two. So let's dig it. Okay, as I said, Mick Collington is the user from our pick'em game that is going to put his picks up against mine. I didn't hear back from Mick. Usually I try to pick someone early in the week and I send an email to you guys letting you know, let me know what you think about the games that we differ on. Why did you pick that game? So that I can have a little communication as to why we differ on the games that we differ on. Well, we don't have mixed reasoning, but I'll go ahead and give you the picks. We'll start with Thursday Night Football, where the Denver Broncos head to Kansas City to face the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs are favored by 3 points at home. That's their home field advantage. The Broncos are trying to do something that hasn't been done ever. They are going to try and win on the road against a division opponent for the, is it seventh time, I believe, something like that, in a row. That's pretty impressive. That means that every year for the last several years, they go on the road and play Oakland and Kansas City and San Diego, and they beat them on the road. But here comes Kansas City, a place where they're typically not very good. Kansas City's coming off a big win. I think they're much better equipped to play in this division than I originally gave them a chance. Now, Mick's got the Denver Broncos winning this game. I've got Kansas City. I think they have a pretty good defense, and they're going to get to Peyton Manning. The problem last week, the Peyton Manning didn't have great success against the Baltimore Ravens. Baltimore came after him, and they hit him a ton. And if you see what the Kansas City Chiefs did to Brian Hoyer and the Houston Texans last week, they are going to get after Peyton Manning. They're going to make him uncomfortable. It's a short week for Denver. They have to travel. I know it's a short week for Kansas City too, but Kansas City in the early game, they get there at home cooking, sleeping in your own bed. Those things make a whole lot of difference, and especially when you got a defense that can get after a quarterback, especially a quarterback that's not as mobile. One like Peyton Manning, I think Kansas City will find success. Alex Smith and the offense, they're going to have to work for this one. But I think in the end, Kansas City gets the win. I don't know if they cover the 3 points, but I will give you this one. I will take the over 42 in this football game. I do like the over in that one because I think they'll both score in the 20s. I'm looking at maybe like a 27-21 type of football game, and I think the Kansas City Chiefs will get it done. Mick got Denver, so that could be a possible challenge game since I lost the challenge game. Oh, you know what, Greg? I'm sorry. You know what? Let me give Greg his shout-out because, Greg, you were great. You won the challenge game. Your Buffalo Bills did exactly what you said they were going to do, and that makes you...
I am the smartest man alive!
So that's for Greg, the Bills fan, who is the smartest man alive. Fans get the first challenge win of the season. So it's my turn to take the challenge game. I reserve to pick the Thursday Night Football game. I'm not quite sure that I'm that confident in it. So we'll move on. Let's head to Sunday morning games, where the Houston Texans travel to Carolina to face the Panthers. Carolina is favored at home by 3. Some places have it as high as 3.5. It actually opened at 4.5, but it's come down since. I think a lot of people think Houston is going to do well in this game, myself included. The Houston Texans made a huge announcement today when they decided that it's time to change quarterbacks. I don't know if you all watched Hard Knocks, but remember Hard Knocks? He makes a decision, Coach O'Brien makes a decision that Brian Hoyer is going to be his quarterback, and they're in the room, right? And he brings the quarterbacks in. He says, I made a decision. We're going to go with Brian Hoyer. He's going to be our starter. He names a starter. Everything's going great. But he's like, hey, you know, we got to work at it. We got to keep working. We got to keep doing what we got to do. And basically saying, this is, you know, not an opportunity. You know, tells Ryan Mallett, this doesn't mean that, you know, you got to keep working because you may have to come in at some point. Who knew that it was, you know, in game one? Because Hoyer was replaced. Mallett did move the offense a little bit better. And now Hoyer is no longer going to play. The report coming out of Houston is that they're preparing to start Ryan Mallett against the Carolina Panthers. And what do you know? A promotion. So we don't know what's really going to happen. Bill O'Brien has said that he is not going to tell anyone who his starter is until Sunday. And he's going to try and keep that. You know, he told his quarterbacks that, you know, he'll decide who's going to happen. I don't know how you can go back and forth with these quarterbacks like this. Maybe he did make a mistake in making Hoyer the starter, and Mallett should be the starter, but you got to make a decision. And if he makes this decision to go to Mallett now, you have to stick with Mallett. You got to stick with one guy. You can't be having a guy who's out there looking over his shoulder. If he makes a mistake, roll with it. I mean, it's not like the Houston Texans were doing Brian Hoyer any favors last week. I mean, he was getting hit all the time. He was running around like a chicken with his head cut off. And, yeah, Mallett came in and they put up some points. But it's not like, you know, Hoyer wasn't trying. He just didn't have a whole heck of a lot of time. Mallett's going to start. And if he does, I think he has to be your starter for the foreseeable future. Unless he gets popped and he gets knocked out of the football game, that's the guy that you got to stick with. You can't be going week in, week out, changing the lineup on your team. You just can't do that. I think it's too destructive, and it's not something that you want your team every week trying to figure out who the starting quarterback is going to be. This being said, he goes ahead with Mallett. Mallett gets it done. I think that the Houston Texans, because of their defense, will actually come out and get a win. I don't think that they will fall 0-2. Carolina was fortunate that they played the Jacksonville Jaguars last week. Cam Newton is pretty good. However, the problem with Cam Newton is he doesn't have a whole lot of weapons. Greg Olsen is his guy, even though and the Jacksonville Jaguars were able to kind of get Greg Olsen and take him off his game. And so he didn't have much to throw to. And Cam Newton was running. He made some running plays with his legs. And it'll be interesting to see how they play. He plays against a defense that has a J.J. Watt and a Will Fork, and they're going to get after him. They're going to come after him hard, and they're going to smack him around a little bit. So I like Houston. Mick also has the Houston Texans to win this game. So there you go. Houston, as I said, is a dog. We think they're going to win outright. This is probably one of the games that will go on my card this week, as I like the Houston Texans, especially since they're getting 3 points. Okay, moving on, the San Francisco 49ers travel to Pittsburgh to face the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers right now are 6-point favorites. And I just have a question for Las Vegas. What? How? Why? Where do you come up with this point spread of 6? I mean, San Francisco did not look shabby. Yes, Minnesota looked awful on Monday Night Football, but 6 points? I think the 49er defense is a little bit better than anybody has given them credit for,
And the Pittsburgh Steelers didn't shine like they were all this great football team when they played the Patriots on Thursday night. Now, I think part of this line has to do with the Steelers having the long break. They haven't played since last Thursday, and San Francisco had to play the short Monday night, late Monday night game, and then they have to travel across the country. I understand all of that, but I think the Pittsburgh Steelers don't have all their weapons. They're still without Le'Veon Bell. They're still without Martavis Bryant at the wide receiver position. And they've got some injuries on the offensive line. I think San Francisco can get to Big Ben. I think Pittsburgh wins the game. Mick's got the San Francisco 49ers. I've got the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I think Pittsburgh wins the game. I don't know if they win by a touchdown necessarily, but they'll win the game. I think it'll be a field goal game. 3-4 points will win it. Pittsburgh will come out on top. They're not going to go down 0-2. And at home, they're pretty tough, especially since San Francisco is coming off that short Monday night football game, having to play the late game. So I'll take the Steelers in that one. We'll continue with the morning games as the New Orleans Saints host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Saints favored by 10 in this game, and it's like, ouch. Now, originally, they were only, I think it opened at like 10.5 or 11. It's come down a little bit. I think that's just a big number. That's a big line. I would not think that the New Orleans Saints are going to be blowing out anybody out of the water. But this is a young Tampa Bay Buccaneer team. I think the New Orleans Saints are a little bit more stacked offensively. Defensively, not so much, but I don't think you have to worry about it when you're going up against a rookie quarterback that doesn't look all that great right now. He is struggling. It's going to take him a few more weeks, and I'm talking about Jameis Winston right now, take him a few more weeks to kind of get back into the groove of things. I like New Orleans to win the game. So does Mick. Mick's taking the Saints as well. I would stay away from the line just because it's so huge, but we both like New Orleans to come out on top and get this win. Moving on, the Detroit Lions get to come back. And actually, they're on the road again. They were on the road last week. They're not at home, but they get to face a division rival. This week, they get the Minnesota Vikings. As I said, the Minnesota Vikings are not at all the football team that I thought they were going
to
be.
Let's just say that the team I saw on Monday night was not the team I expected to come out this season. Also, we have to see if they're going to hand the ball off a little bit more to Adrian Peterson. Dude had 4 carries in the first half. 4 carries in the first half. Here's a guy who hasn't played football in a while. He's got fresh legs. He wants to get in there. You didn't play him in the preseason for whatever reason to get him some hits. Then you throw him out there, you hand him the ball 4 times, and then you sit him down. Just did not make a whole heck of a lot of sense. Let's see if they give him the football more. But right now, the defense of the Detroit Lions is going to be pretty fierce. They're going to get after Teddy Bridgewater. And if he plays even half as bad as he did last week against the San Francisco 49ers, they'll die again. They'll get crushed again. I like Detroit. I think offensively, they're better suited for this matchup. I know it's in Minnesota. Minnesota's home game. The Vikings are favored by 2.5. That's just, this is Trisha's special upset special, where, you know, they're home favorites by less than the 3 that they should be getting. And I think Detroit will, quite frankly, win the game. So if they're giving you points with the Lions, I would take it. Next game, the Arizona Cardinals are traveling to Chicago, Chi-Town, to face the Chicago Bears. And the Bears are home dogs. They're actually opened up 1.5-point dogs. The line is currently 2.5, so the Cardinals are favored by 2.5. And you know what? I've got the Cardinals winning this game comfortably. Arizona with Carson Palmer looks a whole lot different on the offensive side of the ball. I know that Andre Ellington got injured a little bit. He's going to miss some time, but they got a kid who kind of stepped right in and filled the hole. And you know, the Cardinals did not look like they missed a beat.
The thing that impresses me about the Arizona Cardinals is their defense. They get after you. They get after the ball no matter who's got the ball, whether it's a quarterback, a running back, wide receiver. They all seem to just gang tackle everybody. I didn't see a play against the New Orleans Saints last week where at least three, four, five guys are hitting the carrier, the ball carrier. That's pretty impressive. They kind of flock to the football on defense. And that's something that I think is going to work against the Chicago Bears. Right now, Chicago Bears have Matt Forte going for them. He is being Forte and not Pianissimo. He, you know, looked really good against the Green Bay Packers last week. And, you know, Jay Cutler, you know, he didn't have much to work with, but he's certainly growing his confidence with Martellus Bennett. And Alshon Jeffries, those two guys got some pretty good passes last week against the Green Bay Packers. So, you know, don't completely think that this is going to be a blowout. I think this will be a tight game. But the Chicago Bears just always seem to find a way to lose those tight games. That's why I like Arizona, and Mix got them as well. Morning game, the New England Patriots. Do I have to call them the defending Super Bowl champion New England Patriots? What do y'all think? I think y'all should send me an email. If you want me to call them the defending Super Bowl champion New England Patriots, send me an email. Say, yes, I should call them that. And if you don't want me to call them that, don't send any email. Just, you know, I'll just. So I tell you what, if I get 25 emails that say I need to call them the defending Super Bowl champion New England Patriots, that's what I will call them. If I don't get 25 emails, I'll just call them the New England Patriots. How about that? So right now, since I don't have the emails yet, even though I'm just putting it out, we'll just call them the New England Patriots. They're coming to Buffalo to play the Buffalo Bills. This game started as the Bills were underdogs, and now it's a pick 'em. So, well, in some places it's a pick 'em. Some places still have them as 1.5-point underdogs. If you are going to get the Buffalo Bills at home, coming off that fantastic win over the Indianapolis Colts, and someone's going to give you points, take the points, because I think Buffalo is going to get after Tom Brady. It's the one thing that Rex Ryan knows how to do. Rex Ryan's keeping his team focused. They will get after Brady. And I think, you know, as Greg the Bills fan kind of pointed out, nobody's really talking about that offense of the Buffalo Bills. It's not too shabby, okay? It's not shabby at all. They looked pretty good offensively last week. Now, the Colts don't have a juggernaut defense, but look, the Patriots don't have one either. They're struggling a little bit on the defensive side of the ball. I'm going to take the Buffalo Bills to get the win over the division rivals. I think the New England Patriots, there's a chink in the armor, and I think the Buffalo Bills are going to take advantage of it. I like Buffalo to win this game. If you're going to give me 1.5 points, I'll take Buffalo in the 1.5 points. I think New England gets their first loss of the season. San Diego Chargers and Cincinnati Bengals. San Diego having to go across the country to face the Bengals. The Bengals already defeated an AFC West opponent last week in taking care of the Oakland Raiders. Here comes San Diego that had to do a whole lot just to get past the Detroit Lions at home. They have to go on the road across the country. The Chargers typically have not been a really good early game team. It's going to be a 10 a.m. game on the West Coast. They're going to have to go into Cincinnati. Cincinnati's a 3-point favorite right now, and I think that they will cover that. I think they can win by a touchdown. It's going to be good, and it'll be a high-scoring affair. The over-under right now is 46.5. I would go over that. I think there will be a lot of points scored. You just have a lot of weapons. San Diego with Ladarius Green and Keenan Allen and Woodhead and Melvin Gordon coming out of the backfield. Cincinnati, of course, with Jeremy Hill and Bernard. And then you've got A.J. Green and Tyler Eifert. These guys are just playing on all cylinders right now. I take Cincinnati. And Mick is actually taking the San Diego Chargers. Mick, why'd you take San Diego? because they're the Chargers, the Super Chargers. Hey, I don't even know if that's what Mick sounds like, but I just went there. Just leave me alone right now, because Mick, you didn't send me your stuff, man. What happened? All right, he's got the Chargers. I've got the Bengals. That might be the challenge game. I'm not quite sure yet. Another morning game, the Tennessee Titans travel to Cleveland to face the Browns. Most likely Johnny Manziel will be at the helm there for the Cleveland Browns. That game right now, the Tennessee Titans are favored by a point to a point and a half. Some places have it as a pick 'em. I like Tennessee. I'm sorry. If you're telling me that I got to pick between Marcus Mariota or Johnny Manziel, and I know that Mariota's a rookie and Manziel's been in the league for a couple years, I've seen what Manziel can do, and I've seen one game of what Marcus Mariota can do. I don't expect him to throw for four touchdown passes every week, but because this Cleveland Browns defense is actually pretty good, this is not like playing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense, but I still think Marcus Mariota will get the best of them. They'll do pretty good, and that Tennessee Titans defense is no slouch. What I like about Tennessee right now is they're doing it with a whole bunch of no-name guys. I tell you, by midseason, everybody's going to be talking about the names on the Tennessee Titans, both offensively and defensively. Bishop Sankey looked pretty good. Kendall Wright looked pretty good. It's a work in progress, I know, and you can't get, you know, once again, back to the beginning of the show, don't overreact. It's just 1 week. I understand that, but there's a lot of positives that you could take from the Tennessee Titans. I'm not sure they're going to be there at the end of the season, but I think that right now, when they play weaker teams, like last week where they played Tampa Bay, like this week where they play the Cleveland Browns, they will get those W's. They will win the games that they're supposed to win when they're playing opponents that are a little bit lower than them. So both Mick and I like the Tennessee Titans, and that's where we'll go with that. Another early game on Sunday, the Atlanta Falcons, fresh off their whooping of the Philadelphia Eagles, travel to New York to face the New York Football Giants and their final last-second loss to the Dallas Cowboys. This is a game that Mick and I differ upon. He's got the New York Giants. I've got Atlanta. And the sole reason that I'm taking Atlanta is I saw firsthand with my eyes that New York Giant defense. Trust me, folks. That is not a very good defense right now. It is not. If the Dallas Cowboys can go on 2 fourth-quarter drives, one that went like a minute 30 seconds, another one that went like about 2 minutes and 37 seconds, and so 2 minute 37 second 80-yard drive, minute 37 second 72-yard drive with no timeouts, march right down the field and score touchdowns on both of them, and this is without Dez Bryant, their star wide receiver on the field. Guess what Roddy White and Julio Jones and Hank Lankershim is going to do, and Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman coming out of the backfield, what these guys are going to do to that Giants defense. I don't care that it's in New York. Right now the Giants are actually a point and a half favorites, and actually you're telling me that you're going to give me the Atlanta Falcons and you're going to give me anywhere from a point and a half to 2 points? Take Atlanta. Take the points. They're going to take care of the Giants. I'm sorry that it's just the Giants don't have the offensive firepower to match the Atlanta Falcons. And the Atlanta Falcons defense played pretty well in that first quarter against Philadelphia in that high-flying offense. They kind of held them in check. Yeah, they gave them some big plays later on in the second half, but they were holding the cushion there. So I like Atlanta. This should be good. And Mick, you'll take the Giants. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to make this the challenge game. Right now I'm locking it in, for myself. This will be the challenge game here. Challenge. As I've got the Falcons and Mick will take the New York Giants. Another early game. And I think, the final early game, man, there's a lot of early games this Sunday. The St. Louis Rams travel to our nation's capital to face the Washington Redskins. Whoo, doggy. Those Redskins are not looking good right now, people. The Washington Redskins struggled last week against the Miami Dolphins. They didn't look very good. They were on the road. They're at home now. But still, here comes a St. Louis Rams team that's feeling pretty good about themselves. They're feeling pretty invincible. The Redskins are 4-point dogs at home. That tells you exactly what all the folks in Vegas think about that Washington Redskins football team. But the St. Louis Rams, too, I'm not sure they can go on the road and beat somebody by 4 points. I think this is a field goal game. Probably, you know, not go to overtime, but 3 points is about right. The Washington Redskins need to step up, and they need to, like, they got to decide right now. Are we going to play hard all season and try to make our team be proud, or are we just going to roll over right now, week two of the season? There just was no passion coming out of that organization, that whole team last week against Miami when DeSean Jackson went down with the hamstring injury. You know, because they started early. You know, Cousins threw that long pass, and you know, although they didn't connect, it was showing, hey, we're gonna chuck it deep. But then they lost their deep guy. So now all the pressure's on Pierre Garçon. He's not really a deep guy. He's go across the middle, kind of get you those hard yards. So I don't know if they have a weapon that can go deep. I know that the St. Louis Rams have all kinds of weapons that can go deep. And so I'm taking the Rams. Mick's got the Rams. As a matter of fact, from here on out, Mick and I are going to agree. We have got the exact same teams. I got the Rams in this one, so does Mick. I don't think that the Redskins have any kind of okay, everybody's got a chance to win the football game. So I can't say they don't have any kind of chance to win the football game. But the problem is that they're just not playing at high-level football right now. I would put one of the top collegiate teams against Washington. We'd have a good football game. I'm not saying that the college team's going to win, but it would be a good football game. It would be close. It wouldn't be a blowout. And just, you know, they looked flat against Miami. When you looked at the Washington Redskins last week playing that game, they just didn't, there was no, it was just kind of like, you know, it was
bad. It had nothing, no fire, no energy, no nothing.
No nothing. That's what it was. It had no nothing. And it doesn't instill confidence that now you're going to go up against the St. Louis teams that's looking pretty good defensively, looking pretty good offensively, just stuck it to the defending NFC champion Seattle Seahawks, beat them in overtime. How are they going to compete? How's Washington going to compete against this kind of a team? I'll take St. Louis, and I'm not sure that I want to give that many points, but I've got the Rams winning the game, and that's good enough for me. Now, the late games on Sunday, there are only 3 afternoon games. We'll start with Jacksonville as the Jacksonville Jaguars host the Miami Dolphins in a sort of battle of Florida, if you will. You know, folks, it hurts me. I'm sitting here and I'm literally struggling as to what I'm going to say about this football game. The Miami Dolphins, yeah, they got the win last week. They beat the Washington Redskins, who I right now am considering to be one of the weakest teams in the league. And they didn't do it with a lot of style. They, you know, defensively, they look really good. So right now, that's the advantage Miami, because Jacksonville just didn't look really good offensively last week. And now they got to face a pretty tough defense in Miami. But Miami's got to show me something more. That back-to-back games where they're playing weaker opponents, and I want to see them crush these guys. I mean, they struggled for that 17-10 win last week. They should have just rolled the Redskins. Let's see if they roll the Jacksonville Jaguars. I got Miami for the win. Mick has Miami as well. The line is 6.5. The Jacksonville Jaguars are 6.5 home dogs. Usually you don't have dogs at home by a touchdown. Minnesota can win by a touchdown. So I'm going to take Minnesota, and I'm probably going to give up those points just because I don't trust the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's Miami. Miami has to take it to Jacksonville. They got to take it to them early. They got to get the crowd out of it, even though they're in Jacksonville and there's not really typically a very large crowd. They got to get the crowd out of it early. They got to take an early lead and then just keep pressing and keep pushing pedal to the metal to make sure that they get the blowout and not just struggle to eke out a win. We've both got Miami. Ryan Tannehill, It's time to step up, man. It's time to take that offense and make them move. Show me something more than 17 points against the Jacksonville Jaguars. If Carolina can score 20, I want 27-28 out of Miami. How about that? All right, the Oakland Raiders get to host. How do the Raiders open with two week one, week two home games? That must be nice. Raiders are now hosting the Baltimore Ravens. Oakland is, again, a home dog. They are dogs by 6.5 points. Another touchdown. And look, the Baltimore Ravens are coming off a game where offensively they look static, but that's because that Denver Bronco defense is no joke. Joe Flacco got hit a lot. He got hit often. But here they come. They're coming into Oakland. I don't think the Oakland Raiders are ready for prime time. I think the Raiders can win 4, 5, maybe 6 games this season, but they're not quite ready to play really elite football teams like the Baltimore Ravens to get wins. I like Baltimore. I'm not sure about the 7 points. I'll probably just lay off of that, but I think Baltimore wins easily. Mix got the Ravens as well, and it'll be interesting to see if Oakland can make a game of it. Derek Carr will most likely play. I think that's the word coming out of Oakland, that he will be on the football field. But regardless of whether it's Carr, whether it's McGloin, or whether it's anybody else they pull off the street, I think Baltimore will take care of Oakland with no problem. The final afternoon game, which is America's football game of the week on Fox, it'll be televised nationally. It's going to be a big game. The Dallas Cowboys traveling to Philadelphia to face the Philadelphia Eagles. Surprisingly enough, both Mick and I have Dallas. I thought Mick would probably be taking the Eagles. I actually wanted to make this a challenge game. But we both have the Dallas Cowboys in this one. It's going to be tough matchup. I think it's going to be tight. DeMarco Murray comes back to play his old team. Although, you know, DeMarco Murray is being all business right now, saying all the right things, saying nothing to give bulletin board material to the Dallas Cowboys. But I think that the Cowboys, in the end, are going to be a little bit more methodical. They will control the clock. I mean, did you see the time of possession that they had last week against the Giants? If the Cowboys eliminate the turnovers that they had against the Giants last week, they will win this game easily. I think they're going to get after Sam Bradford. I think Sam Bradford's going to get hit a couple times in this game, kind of rattle him up a little bit. And I think, in the end, the Cowboys will come out with a 3-4-point win over the Philadelphia Eagles to take pretty nice early control of the NFC East. Mick's got Dallas as well. And we go to Sunday Night Football, where it's revenge of the touchception. The Green Bay Packers hosting the Seattle Seahawks. Green Bay's favored by 3 at home. Seattle's coming off a tough loss in overtime. Green Bay had their victory against the Chicago Bears. Aaron Rodgers just finds people to throw the football to. James Jones was cut. Check this out, people. James Jones, the wide receiver, was cut by the Oakland Raiders, deemed not worthy to be a starting wide receiver for that team. Please, are you kidding me? The Giants brought him into training camp and cast him off after training camp was over, deemed that he was not worthy to be a starter for that football team. Are you kidding me? The Green Bay Packers said, hey, man, we lost Jordy Nelson for the season. You want to come back play with us? And in his first game back, catches 2 touchdowns, could have been a third touchdown that was negated by a penalty, but caught 2 touchdown passes over like 60 yards receiving for the Green Bay Packers. And Aaron Rodgers wasn't like he was throwing it to other people. He found Randall Cobb, found Richards. Aaron Rodgers just, he's like now showing you that he can take other guys, unknowns, and make them relevant in the league. And that's exactly what he did last week. James Jones was like, welcome back with open arms. Like, hey, thanks for coming back, James. We love that. Let's go. Here come the Seattle Seahawks. They're going to be angry that they lost that game. They let one slip away. Unfortunately, it's not going to be enough. Like I said, Green Bay is favored by 3, and it does feel like it's a 3-4-point game. And I like Green Bay to pull it out. I think the Packers know that without Cam Chancellor, Aaron Rodgers has a chance to do some pretty good things against that secondary. And so that's where the advantage goes. And Seattle's got to get out of its own way. Obviously, the loss to the Rams didn't make them go out and renegotiate with Cam Chancellor. But I guarantee you, the Green Bay Packers win this football game, and Aaron Rodgers throws the football around at will, they will come back and go get back to the table with Cam Chancellor and try to bring him in for week three. But both Mick and I have the Green Bay Packers winning, and that just leaves us with Monday Night Football. The New York Jets travel to Indianapolis to face the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts are 7-point favorites at home. The Jets are coming off their win of the Cleveland Browns, but no one was really all that impressed, especially since McCown went down in the first quarter. And in the first quarter that he kind of dominated, by the way. But once he went down, that made the Cleveland Browns a completely different football team, and the Jets were able to get that win there. I don't see the Jets going into Indianapolis and stopping the Colts like the Bills did. I mean, the Bills, woo, they played a number on the Colts, man. They came after them, got after Luck, and they just made them look different. I don't think the Jets have the kind of defense that can do that. I think Andrew Luck and the Colts get back on track. They're at home. They'll get the win. I don't know if they'll cover the 7. I think that's a lot. But I think that they will get the win something like 27-24 or 24-20, right in that range. Take the Colts. Mix got the Colts as well on Monday Night Football. We just went over an hour, folks. Thank you once again for listening. I'm sorry that I had to kind of like put the week one recap in with this show as week two preview. And hopefully the next person that I pick for week three to put their picks up against me will give me something to that I can chew off of as to why they made those picks. Mick, you kill me, Mick. You're killing me. You're killing me, Smalls. You're killing me, Smalls. All right, so before we leave, we have one more thing to do and one more thing to do only, and that's to spin the show donor random wheel of fun. So I am actually right now just pulling up the show donor list, and here we go. Once again, to all you show donors, I really, really appreciate you continuing to support the show. There's actually been a few new show donors. Thank you. You should be getting emails with information on what your number is and all that good stuff as well. So here we go. The show donor list is up. And now we're coming to the wheel. The wheel is being loaded. And good luck to all you show donors. Here we go. The winner is 24. 24, James Reese is the winner. You have won a mini fathead of Washington Redskins wide receiver Pierre Garçon. James, thank you very much for continuing to support the show, man. I really appreciate it. Everyone else, wherever you are and however you are listening to the show, thank you for continuing to listen. I'm Steven Miranda, and you've been listening to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm out.